This is the London FinTech Podcast, bringing you practical insights and approaches, stories and inspiration from the innovators who are building the new world of financial services. This podcast is brought to you by NextWave, strategy specialists and solutions for financial institutions. Welcome to the London FinTech Podcast. AI governance is such a critical topic, and we've all seen the AI failure headlines, and we've seen what's happening with the pace of adoption of AI in every area. The earliest incident on the AI incident database, which is a real thing, and you can look it up, was a nuclear false alarm in 1983, and the most recent at the time of this recording was an AI chatbot that urged its Australian user to murder his father. Every AI roundtable and AI strategy session that we've been involved in, and we've run a few, eventually turns to AI governance. And whilst we know that AI systems are probabilistic and the risk of hallucination and bias is very real, and that's only really one of very many risk areas, much of the market investor narrative so far has really focused around the models and the use cases. And yet the risk and the governance angle is so important. To talk about what this means for finance sector, I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Paul Donger, who is the head of Responsible AI and AI Strategy at NatWest Group. Paul has just published a comprehensive book on AI governance with his co-authors, who are also global leaders in AI and advising corporates and governments alike. It's a super timely book, as EY Research and very many other analysts have found 75% of corporates are implementing or have implemented AI in their processes, and yet only a third of them have effective governance in place. Having had a pre-order copy now for about a week, I can confirm that the book really packs it all in. There are standards, legal frameworks, technicals, all sorts of things in here. So today's topic clearly is AI governance, and I really enjoyed this conversation, Paul. It's so informed, so easy to talk to. Let's go to the conversation. Welcome, Paul.
Hi, Tony. Lovely to be here.
It's great to be here with you. So perhaps tell us a bit about your background leading up to being a practitioner in AI. And I think you started pretty early with your PhD.
Absolutely, Tony. Yeah, I've always loved computing. I was programming even in the 80s and did computer science at university, and then heard about this thing called AI and thought, well, that sounds interesting. Let's give that a go. So I ended up doing a PhD in it in the early 90s, and then I taught AI at university. But guess what? There were no jobs in AI. So in the late 90s, I left academia, where I was a researcher, and I came and started working in the city and worked here for about 20 years. Then I kept hearing about AI in sort of 2015-16. It was in the media and you could hear about it with big tech. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to go back to AI and I'm going to pick it up as a career, although late in years. But I quickly realized, Tony, that there was this thing called AI ethics. About 2018-19, I thought, well, that's a thing. That wasn't something we talked about 20 years before. But as I read more and more about it and found out about some of the potential risks of AI, I thought, okay, this is really important, because I think in the future there'll be lots of people building AI systems, probably really powerful ones, but how many people will really be worried and concerned enough about the risks of AI to want to go in and fix that? So that was it. My mind was made up. I was going to work in AI ethics, responsible AI. And as the book is about, AI governance is all about how organizations mitigate those risks and set themselves up to deploy AI safely. So I worked at Lloyds Bank for a while as head of AI ethics, and now I'm at NatWest Bank, leading the same thing and the AI strategy.
And I think you had remarkable foresight, because if I'm right, your PhD was in agent behavior. So with the current hyper-focus on agentic AI, you were really thinking ahead back then.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I'd like to say I planned it all, but I kind of didn't. It was just fascinating to me. Yeah. So in the early 90s, it was, if you could conceive of something called an agent, then an agent makes decisions, it's autonomous, it interacts with other agents and other systems. And to me, it seemed quite obvious that that's where AI would be headed. So I spent some time doing the mathematical modeling of AI agents and how they should behave and how to get them to kind of behave correctly, but in a theoretical sense. So the machines weren't there doing that, but the maths was there to help model it. Yeah. So yeah, that's kind of what I did. People thought I was a bit mad.
So you've certainly got the right background for what you're doing now. So what is the day job? What does that really comprise?
Well, at NatWest Bank, I'm head of responsible AI and AI strategy. So the first part of that job title, responsible AI, I work with technology teams and departments all across the bank to ensure that we mitigate the risks of AI. So that's working with technology people that build AI systems. That's working with our privacy teams. It's working with legal teams. to working with our risk function. And every bank has a lot of people employed in managing risk. And that's broken up into various teams, mathematical guys that validate models. And the whole risk management process is run by those teams. So I spend a lot of time with those teams. It really boils down to ensuring that the technology, tools and processes we have in an organization as big as a bank all works together, so that if there are any risks of AI, they're mitigated and managed, and we can report and demonstrate how we're doing that. So that's a large part of the work that I do. Yeah. On the AI strategy side, we work across the whole bank and look at where we want to use AI in the long term. So we call them thematic areas. So do we want to use it for customer support? Do we want a lot of software developers using AI? So clearly that's a big job. And the strategy really points to those big areas and what we'll do to harness AI. And it really forms the basis of how the rest of the company organizes itself around AI.
Yeah, and I think that role of working across the organization is something that comes out really strongly in the frameworks that you've written into the book. So when folks get into this, it's a good link to, we're here really to talk about your book, Governing the Machine. And once folks get into looking at some of the frameworks and playbooks that this contains, it's very clear that the whole organization needs to get involved. And I think you're really sort of living and breathing that in what you're doing with NatWest.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So Governing the Machine. So tell us about this. What prompted you to write the book?
Well, Ray, one of my co-authors, Ray Eitel-Porter, he actually approached me in June last year and said, "Paul, I'm semi-retiring. I want to write a book with you." And I was blown away. I was like, "Wow, that would be wonderful." And it took about 5 seconds for me to say yes. I mean, I was thrilled. So we sat together, and we talked through what would be the aim of the book, what the audience would be, and as we continued in that conversation, really realized that actually there isn't really a book that occupies that space, which is a playbook or a handbook for organizations to really guide them as to how to deal with AI and how to set themselves up. So we were really excited. We started planning all the chapters, and I started writing in about July last year as I took on a new job at NatWest Bank.
Yes. Interesting.
I wouldn't advise anyone ever to take on a new job and start a book at the same time.
And I think this has come together really quite quickly. And you asked me just before we switched the cameras on, you know, what did I think? And honestly, I think it's fantastic because we have a lot of dialogues with clients on all aspects of AI. And to your point, I don't think there's anything that really fills this gap. And it is a very practical playbook. So we'll be plugging it again at the end of the conversation. But honestly, if you're listening or watching to this, then you really need to get yourself a copy. So it took you about a year?
The first draft was completed towards the end of November 2024. So it took about 5 or 6 months to get the first draft to the publisher. And I remember we wrote about 120,000 words, and Ray kept saying to me, "Paul, we can't make this longer than 80,000. Bloomsbury were really, really keen to say, "Look, if it's too long, people won't read it. We know 80,000 is about right." And so then we went through a period of cutting out sections, which was, Tony, was really painful, really, really painful. We got the second draft out at the end of January, and the third draft went for copy editing, I think, in April. So really from January to end of April was really massaging the text, making sure that it was tight and reducing the chapters. And then eventually, I think, it went to print in July.
Yeah. So you didn't have writer's block, which I know is a problem for some other people, but the problem is often condensing lots of information down to something really clear and concise.
Correct.
And you've got loads of case studies in here and some really strong endorsements from people who are prominent in the field as well.
Yeah, so the book is littered with case studies of chief data analytics officers or chief data officers, CEOs in different organizations. So as we go through each chapter, we draw on practical experience from those organizations and their views as well, which I think is a really, really powerful part of the book. It's not just two or three people with a view. We take on board what organizations are doing on the ground. And we were really lucky, Tony. You mentioned the endorsements. Andrew NG has written the foreword to the book. And those colleagues that work in AI will know he's one of the founding kind of fathers of AI, along with Geoffrey Hinton and others. So Andrew was kind enough to write the foreword. And then we also have endorsements from the CEO of IBM, which which we're really, really proud of. And also Reid Hoffman, the founder of LinkedIn, has endorsed the book. And I'm a big fan of Professor Stuart Russell, who has also endorsed the book. You'll find his endorsement on the back. And I learned my AI from his textbooks at university in the early 90s and late 80s. So Stuart Russell really is an amazing professor.
Yeah, so a lot of endorsement from the sector and a shout out for a few people there. And this is on pre-order on Amazon at the moment? Is that how you get a copy?
Yeah, you go to Amazon, search for my surname and you'll find the book. You can pre-order it. It will be it officially launches on the 23rd of October. If you pre-order it, I think deliveries are now towards the end of October, so you can get physical copies then. But on the launch date, you'll be able to get an audio version, you'll be able to get an ebook version as well as the hardback.
And you've got some launch events coming up as well.
That's right, Tony. Yes, we do. We've got three launch events all in the same week. So on the 21st of October, we've got a launch event at Jesus College in Cambridge, where Ray is a researcher. On the 22nd of October, we have a launch event at NatWest offices in Bishopsgate in the city where I work. And on the 23rd of October, which is the actual book launch day itself, we have a launch event at Accenture's offices in Fenchurch Street, also in the city. So it'll be 3 days back to back.
Lots of exposure. Well, I'm looking forward to this becoming a bestseller.
Fingers crossed.
And so you're not revving up to write the next one just yet then?
No, Tony, I think I need a bit of a rest. Although for some bizarre reason, I feel like there's still words that I want to write.
Yeah, there's a few things you want to say.
There is. There was a whole chapter on sustainability.
Yeah.
So as many people will know, AI is really power hungry.
Yeah.
And I dedicated an entire chapter just to talking about that. And that's one of the chapters that got condensed to 3 pages. Okay. So there's more to come.
All right. So there's going to be a sequel. Before we jump right into today's episode, a quick thank you to our sponsor, NextWave. NextWave is an award-winning consultancy that is helping many of the world's leading banks, investment managers, and insurers deliver on their growth, efficiency, risk, and control goals and transform their businesses. With a senior team who have come from MD-level positions in major firms like HSBC, Barclays, and UBS, NextWave has both the deep industry expertise and the hands-on capabilities in AI, data, and automation to drive real results. More business outcomes and less PowerPoint from the consulting experience, as their clients like to say. NextWave has moved 2-week manual processes to 5-minute agentic automations, rescued global banking regulatory control programs, and digitized deal platforms, sustainability, and regulatory reporting systems. And they do much of this with hands-on engineering capabilities on leading technologies, which include ServiceNow, Alteryx, Quantexa, and Komunda. So if a modern and specialist alternative to the big brand consulting model sounds appealing, one which covers the full life cycle of strategy specialists and solutions, but with small practitioner teams, rapid delivery, and a better price point, then perhaps you should talk to NextWave. Visit nxwave.com to find out more and get in touch. That's nxwave.com. All right, let's get back to the episode. So look, we've talked a bit about the creative process and everything that's gone into this. And I think perhaps for everyone out there, what's really interesting is your views on AI governance and what you've managed to collate and present that is of value to everyone out there in enterprise and everyone who's using AI. And there is an awful lot in here. So every time I opened the book, I found another framework or a playbook and I thought, oh, well, that's gold. You know, there's a really great insight there. So we can't cover it all. We'll try and hit the high points. If I quote any stats or facts, they've probably come from the book. So they're probably from Paul's research. But let's just start with the broader perspective. Okay. Where do you think AI maturity is currently in the banking and wider FS sector?
Yeah, I think I'm kind of lucky because I think financial services invest a lot in technology and their IT systems. And secondly, it's a regulated industry. So they're quite mature in terms of ensuring that they have robust processes in place so that when they create systems, just IT systems, they're done so rigorously and robustly and they're safe. So I think the platform that banks have and their mindset for developing systems lends itself well to AI. And they'll have mature risk departments, like I said. So I think often in the banking industry, financial services, they usually are quite far ahead compared to other industries, but with robust risk management. And I think we find that certainly in capital markets industries, which many banks have a capital markets or an investment banking arm, where really they have to invest in technology to stay competitive. So you tend to find they have quite mature departments. They have developers with good skill sets in terms of designing, testing and deploying systems and monitoring them. And that's all part of what we need to do for AI governance. So I think financial services does lend itself to that. And secondly, it's well regulated as an industry. So regulators are quite mature in terms of their thinking of what they want banks to do. And banks work well with regulators. They're used to that kind of challenge, if you like, to their systems. So I think financial services is lends itself well to AI.
And quite considered and cautious approach. Do you think FS is sort of leading compared to other sectors, or perhaps taking a more steady and incremental approach given the risks?
I think steady and incremental is what I'm seeing. You know, as you said, you know, given the risks, and given that banking is an industry that is, you know, needs to be robust. You know, every time you make a payment, it's got to go through. So I think they approach IT carefully and with in a considered way. And if anything, they're not right at the bleeding edge. You know, they're not a social media company. They're not essentially breaking new ground with business models. But they're really keen to adopt technology and use it for the benefit of customers.
Yeah. So let's talk about AI risks for a minute. There are headlines out there about McDonald's chicken nugget ordering AI going wrong, fake book recommendations from newspapers. But as you were explaining, in a regulated industry like banking, the impact of getting AI wrong and the risks that the machine can do something are far greater. So if you treat your customers unfairly, you recommend the wrong products, these have financial and reputational consequences and legal consequences. So talk to us a bit about risk. If we think about risk as the probability of something happening and the consequence of something happening, how would you characterize the risks that are out there that come from adoption of AI?
Well, Tony, we discussed this a lot as we were drafting the book. And what we've done is we've landed on 9 big risk areas. And we talk about them in detail in the book. And I'll mention some of them now. I think probably one of the most prominent ones that people will hear about is bias and fairness.
Yes.
So there have been incidents reported over the years of AI discriminating against certain people and being unfair. I think the Amazon example, where Amazon built a machine learning model, an AI model, for filtering and sifting through CVs. Of course, they built the model by training it on all the CVs they already had, which were predominantly from men. So the system kind of inherited that bias and filtered out CVs from females. So that's clearly something we wouldn't want to happen, and that's quite kind of really well documented. So bias and fairness and mitigating any unfairness or any unfair bias is a key thing that we have to do. Fortunately, the approaches to doing that are now quite mature and quite well understood. Mm. So organizations have to put in technology and tools to make sure that doesn't happen. And really, one of the ways to stop that is to test your models before you put them into production. Yeah. So before you unleash them on customers, is to do a lot of rigorous testing. And there are tools and libraries that allow technical folk to look at their model, run it under different scenarios, and ensure actually that it doesn't have an unfair bias, so that when it's deployed, it's okay. So I think that's a key thing. That's a key area. Another key area is privacy. So the data that banks hold of customers is clearly confidential. So we have to ensure that AI doesn't inadvertently leak any information. And as we know, with the launch of technologies like ChatGPT, there have been incidents of data leaks. So again, there are tools to do that, to preserve data and ensure that the boundaries of data privacy are respected. But we also need to work with the people in the bank that look after people's data to ensure that what we do is within legislation. There's security risks as well. So there's been examples that I'm sure you can cite of a security incident where people are prompt hacking, so-called prompt hacking systems.
Prompt injection.
Prompt injection, jailbreaking. Yes. Quite subversive. So it's all these techniques that are emerging. You know, that poses a real threat to organizations. Yeah. And it's really sad. You know, we hear stories all the time of systems being hacked. And what that can lead to is the AI system revealing information that it shouldn't. So it's kind of linked to the privacy thing as well. So we need to safeguard our system. So our cybersecurity folk need to then get involved, as well as our privacy people. And this is why it's cross-organizational, because some of the ways AI systems can behave badly means that actually we need to involve other teams and use their expertise to kind of reinforce our AI systems. So those are kind of three areas of the nine that we explore.
Yeah, and there's also the risk of inaccuracy and inconsistency. So the much cited hallucination risk, and that you're simply going to get a made up answer or the wrong answer.
Clearly, yeah, you've landed on one that's becoming even more well known. So yeah, hallucinations, the way these AI systems like your ChatGPT behave and operate is they do make up information. And they kind of, they do it inadvertently. It's certainly not deliberate. The key point is hallucinations can't be fixed by design. What gives AI its power is it also, on the other side, gives it this deficiency, which is just there, people say, by design, accidentally. But we need to check for hallucinations and mitigate the chances of them occurring when an AI system gives an answer. We have technology that will look at it and go, well, actually, we've checked that, and that actually is a hallucination. So we will stop that answer coming out of the AI. So it's kind of done that way, mostly.
So lots of things to think about. And there's also, on the other side of it, the institution, there's examples of people wiring money because of instructions that have come from deep fake avatars. There's that. And then there's the possibility of being on the wrong side of the regulation, such as it may be defined at this point in time, and that's a moving target as well. And then when you look beyond the various risk domains, there's also, I think, what you would call gray areas or AI ethics, and you know, which scenarios for the use of AI are really in line with the values and the right thing to do.
Exactly, Tony. So AI ethics was a bit of a mysterious term. Yes.
Must have been one of the first heads of AI ethics in the city, I would have thought.
I think I was at Lloyd's. I think I believe I might have been. I don't know for sure.
The first time we came across the job title was when, and you know, we know each other before this recording, but was when we were introduced.
Exactly. Group head of data and AI ethics, and people would look at me and say, what do you do exactly? Ethics is obviously it's a bit of a philosophical term. And what I don't like about the word AI ethics, and why I'm head of responsible AI at NatWest, is I think responsible AI sends a clear message to people that, A, they get the word right, because we use it quite often in language. But it's really saying, look, we as a bank, we take responsibility for our AI, right? If it goes wrong, it's on us, and we'll take ownership of it. Ethics, as a word, how it's used and what it means varies by culture, by language, by the region of the world that you're in. So I was really keen to make sure that responsible AI, and it's in the book as well, the terms are described, it kind of says what it, it does what it says on the tin, if you like.
And under that heading, I mean, just to sort of put a bit of color on that, I think I'm right in saying it's things like social profiling and whether you should be looking on social media before you make a lending decision and things like that. These are in the sort of ethics bucket. Is that the right thing to do, that to profile customers like that?
Yeah, exactly, Tony. So ethics has all of those grey areas, and sometimes you can do something that by someone's view of ethics is actually acceptable. It's absolutely fine. But for other people and other cultures and other sectors, that's a real no-no. So that example there of maybe scraping someone's social media profile to find something out about them, to then use that information to maybe sell something to them or exploit that. You know, for me personally, I think that's completely unethical. The other point on ethics is, and I talk about it in the book as well, is for organizations, actually they should land on the values and the principles that the organization supports. So we should always look at our use of AI through the lens of our principles and our values of the organization. Say, does that use of AI promote and support what we stand for as an organization and as a brand? And for me, that's really where the ethics conversation lands, it lands there.
Yeah, I love that. And I note that you do start with principles in everything that you've explained. And it's quite a good lead into AI regulation. So perhaps a slightly harder boundary of what's permissible. And it does depend a little bit regionally where you go as to quite how rigid that boundary is. But AI regulation, I think you call out that the EU AI Act and the NIST framework are the two that are perhaps best defined. Can you talk about how that helps in this governance space and what those regulations really require?
Sure, Tony. Yeah. So the European Union has now got, as you say, an act. So it's legislation. So you must comply with it through law. And the EU AI Act says certain uses of AI are high risk, some are medium risk, and some are kind of low risk. Mm. So a high risk use of AI would be an organization building an AI system to make credit lending decisions, so loans to customers. So if we're a bank and we built an AI system and it's saying you can get a loan or you can't get a loan, the AI system makes that decision, that's high risk. And what the Act says is if you're an organization that has built one of these systems and deployed it, you must have good risk management in place. You must demonstrate that it's not biased, mm-hmm. it's not unfair. You must do this, you must do that. So it's very prescriptive. It tells you what you must legally do, what you're obliged to do in order to be able to deploy a high-risk system.
And I noted that you also have to put the application in the EU AI high-risk register database before you put it live. Right?
You have read the book.
To find the EU AI risk database. I don't think it's there yet, is it?
I think you might be right. I think you might be ahead of me on that. I think it's being created.
Okay, work in progress.
So it's in progress. So the act has actually come into force.
Yeah.
But there are different dates in the act going forward. Yeah. So August 2026 is a really key date.
Yeah.
And organizations are working towards that date. So by August 2026, if any organization has a high risk system, it's got to go in the database.
And it's the 2nd of August 2026, by the way.
Wow.
But the question is, and this is a really interesting point, which I don't know whether you have a view on. When I looked this up, apparently the legislation won't apply retrospectively. So if you put your high-risk AI system live before the 2nd of August 2026, you don't necessarily have to fall in line.
You really have read it, haven't you, Tony? That's actually right, yes.
That's slightly crazy.
And there are a few little, I think, points of contention in the Act that firms are trying to seek clarity on.
Yeah.
It's clearly from one perspective, that might open it up to gaming the system. Nonetheless, so the EU AI Act is the first global piece of legislation around AI.
Yeah.
Now, listeners might be thinking, well, why does it apply to a bank like NatWest? Because, we're not in the EU.
Yeah.
The point about the Act is it's called extraterritorial. So what that means is if you're a company and you're incorporated, let's say, in the States, but you're deploying an AI system that has customers that are EU citizens, then you must comply with the Act. In that sense, even though it's just from the EU. The other framework you mentioned, Tony, the I guess it's the NIST framework. Now that's not a piece of legislation, right? So organizations are not going to be fined or breaking the law. They're in effect principles based as well, like the UK. And principles based means that our regulators have really recommended very strongly that this is a prudent way of operating and you must do certain things. So it's a kind of soft legislation in a way. And I'm really lucky. All of the organizations I talk to and people that do my role, those organizations are following principles and are aiming to comply with them.
And at the bank, you've been mapping your policies and processes back to these frameworks.
Correct.
To make sure that you're covering all the gaps.
Yes, we do. I've got a full project team that works across the bank on ensuring that, well, literally every single sentence in the EU AI Act, we know what it means and we can map that to principles and, in fact, our policies as well.
Yeah, and we'll get on to tools and technologies in a moment. Yeah. But there are now emerging platforms that have codified those principles and processes so you can build your AI registry and map back to it and govern that whole process centrally. Yeah. Okay. So, look, we've talked about risks, we've talked about regulations, so we're sort of starting from the problem side of this. But I'm equally interested in what's the solution. So how do you approach AI governance in enterprise? What should you be building? What should you be putting in place? So perhaps we'll start with whose problem is it? You know, where does this, who's driving?
Whose problem is it? It's a good question. I mean, I'm kind of tempted to say it's the whole organization, but really what's key is recognition at the board level, Tony. The people that are responsible for driving the organization and its operations, they need to own this. So your chief information officer, for example, or your chief operating officer, they need to be able to own this. And key to that means employing someone and key people who have ownership and a mandate to force the changes the organization will need to make to comply with regulations and to mitigate these risks. So having the mandate clearly and the accountability, I think is absolutely key. So it starts at the board and then it filters down and we go into the book into different roles that people should have. So, you know, should you have a chief AI officer? And if you do, what do they do? What don't they do? Should you have a chief AI risk officer? And if you do, what should they do and shouldn't they do? And then the kind of, if you like, the governance forums, and what that really means is the teams that they create. What do those teams look like and what are individual roles in those teams and how do they operate? We go into that in quite a lot of detail.
It's pretty well spelt out. There's an operating model in here. I think it has 13 different forums on it. And last count. So you really need to involve the whole organization, but it's got to come from the top. Yeah. And some of those new roles like chief AI officer are relatively recent. I think the New York Times called chief AI officer the hottest role in corporate America last year. Those of you who've now got the AI label, you're in the hot seat. Clearly there's a lot riding on this.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that the chief AI kind of risk officer and the person involved in deploying AI, you know, they need to work really closely together. And actually, that's one of the reasons I'm really glad that I have the responsible AI role as well as the AI strategy role. I think that's a key part, is bringing them both together so they kind of work in harmony.
Yeah.
You know, and it's really important to me.
So let's take a little bit of a walk through the AI governance framework and process. So you've got your C-suite sponsorship, not just to use AI, but to put proper governance in place. You're aware of the regulations. You've got your chief AI officer and your risk officer and your ethics roles established and your organizational structure. Then what? Where do you start with practically putting governance in place?
So once those roles are in place, clearly there are governance forums, if you like, meetings that they will have to convene with representatives from some of the other teams I mentioned. So your legal teams, your privacy teams, your data science teams, so the folks actually building the systems. So key people in those areas will need to be part of a team that's created for managing the risks. So that's spelled out in the book. A key part of enabling that is all of the training that needs to be done. So it's a theme throughout the book. None of this really works without ensuring that there's awareness of what these AI risks are and that there's awareness of how to mitigate them. So there's a lot of cultural awareness and training that needs to go hand in hand. We have a full appendix of training courses. So once you have those in place, there's a number of other things that have to happen. We have to have meetings that happen in a fashion that allows them to be able to deal with the risks. So, for example, there's an ethics board. So you must spin up an AI ethics board, which we recommend organizations do. And those boards should look at potential uses of AI. So if there's one part of an organization that says, we've got some budget, we'd like to make an AI system that does something. As soon as that happens, that needs to be kind of registered somewhere. And then an ethics board convened to look at if the possibility that there could be an AI risk unintentionally emerging from that particular use. So you need to have a process in place that says if any part of the organization wants to build a system, they write something down and they're subject to an assessment.
Yes.
And then that assessment gets looked at by an AI ethics team that would work for the responsible AI officer. They look at that and think, actually, I think we need to dig a bit deeper in that and then go through a process of assessing the AI system. That's spelled out in the book. Once the AI system is kind of ticked, so it's okay, then the IT teams need to get involved. When our IT teams start developing their system, they need to incorporate some technology tooling in their, we call it the data science lifecycle. And there are third-party tools you can buy from IT companies. They're specialist providers of tools. So the developers would utilize those and ensure that they can test the system once they're developing it. And then once a system is eventually deployed, after it's been checked, once it's deployed, we'll have other teams who are responsible for monitoring the AI to ensure that once it's running and in operation, that it's actually behaving in the way we still want it to do. Yeah. So there's a lot in there, Tony. There's your process, your people, your roles, your training, and then the technology parts that have to come together. And I haven't even talked that much about what the risk teams have to do, but there's a lot involved in that. I think the key takeaway, if I was to abstract away from it all, is it needs to be an organizational wide effort. Yeah. This isn't building a bit of tech to solve a risk. It's not just putting a process in place or putting one meeting in place and having a checkbox or a compliance. It's a comprehensive activity.
Yeah, it's an organizational shift. And when we look at AI maturity with Next Wave clients, we really look at the layers of the use cases, the data, the governance and control, the talent and the education and the processes. And it's all, and you have to address all of it together. And actually, just picking on a few of those, because there was a lot there, actually.
Yes, there was.
You can have to read it. But the education and the training.
It's really important.
So in the roundtable sessions that we've been running with industry folks over the last couple of years, the level of awareness and education point and the training point comes out every time. Yes. And we've had people at the opposite ends of the table, sometimes from the same organization. I think one of them might have been one of your former employers, where we had data science and engineering leads who were completely on the front foot and understood all the tools and built loads of models and were really leading with the with building applications and solutions, but their business counterparts really had no idea what the AI use cases were or how to use it responsibly. And big gap in education, and you need to lift the whole organization. And I think in the book you talk about three different types of training, general training, AI owner training, and then the technical training on the deep dive on the LLMs and the agents, etc.
I'd repeat this quite a lot. None of this really works without getting that training out there and actually getting people to understand what the risks are and why they can come about. And once you get to that understanding, you realize that actually we can resolve and mitigate many of these. And there are techniques to get kind of the best out of AI, confidently knowing that it's going to be okay. And that's a really key message.
And the other thing I'd like people to understand is that, because we've talked a lot about roles and committees and lots of meetings, and it's sort of, we can more sort of corporate bureaucracy, that yes, that's required. But actually, effective AI governance is highly systematic. It's very data-driven. And so in your process, you are cataloguing and you're creating inventories of AI applications, AI models and the data that's used in them. And you're running some quite prescriptive processes to test them and to govern the models and so forth. So this isn't thematic. It's actually quite systematic.
That's right, Tony. No, absolutely. And there are some kind of flow charts in the book. So it does show you key stages to go through and key ways of transitioning through an organization with those roles. So it does become something that is tractable and traceable. The traceability is really important. That transparency over what's happening is really important. You mentioned something else, but I didn't really go into that much, but the governance, risk and compliance platform. Mm. So that GRC platform is really that tool that anyone in the organization can kind of log into and see the inventory of all the AI that we've got in an organization, which AI didn't pass the ethics council, how an AI system was analyzed, what risk it might pose, how the risk is being mitigated. So all of those things that we talk about that seem quite disparate do come together and ideally should be in one system that's called a governance, risk and compliance system.
Yeah, and that's a good link to technologies. I'd like to talk about technologies and tools for a minute. Yeah. So the governance or the central hub, you know, there are a number of offerings out there. Yeah, right. ServiceNow have an AI. Control Tower, SS&C have an AI. Gateway, you can get, I think for more SME-type firms, you can get hub governance solutions from the likes of Credus AI. But do you have a view on tools that out there, perhaps for you know, start with enterprise. So that's sort of space that you're in. But I'm curious what you'd recommend for smaller or mid-market firms as well. But if there's anything to take a look at.
Yeah, no, it's a good question. And I'm quite hesitant in recommending one particular platform, but if I just rattle through them, for very large organizations, like a bank or a large consultancy, typically they would have a lot of their IT systems on the cloud.
Yes.
And there are a handful of very big cloud vendors out there that are household names. Now, all of those vendors offer effectively governance, risk and compliance as components that they've added into their platform. So if you're, for example, if your cloud provider is Google, you can go to them and then you can license some of their software, which in effect will do a lot of what I've just said. It will allow
you to... So if you go into sort of Google Vertex, you get the various controls we've been talking about.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly that. So you can leverage something that your cloud provider gives you already, which has advantages, right? If you're already on that cloud platform, then their governance modules will work very well with their platform. So for large organizations, you know, that would be kind of one thing to look at. But then there are other organizations that that don't have real cloud offerings, but are very large IT companies that would, you know, IBM, for example, or SAS would typically have large platforms, and they can do this as well and implement governance, risk and compliance. And then the third category I think of are more your niche vendors that implement these systems, and that is what they do. That is their purpose for existing. Yeah. And you mentioned one of them just now. And they're really leading the charge on this. Mm. Right? So you buy their software, you put it on your cloud or your own infrastructure, and then you stitch together, for want of a better word, your AI development platform that creates the models so that it feeds data into these platforms. And then you have an inventory there, you have a list of controls. You'll have something that you can put your principles into, then decompose your principles to show how you're meeting those principles through your AI systems. It's quite a bit of engineering that's involved in getting these systems in. For a medium or a small organization, that might be an overkill to actually license, and expensive as well, to license software from some of these larger vendors. So our advice in the book is, have a look at the requirements of your organization, your budget, which sector you're in. So are you in a high-risk sector or not? And then really make a decision as to whether you should go with a vendor or whether you could potentially build something in-house. Mm. That's always an option. But it's really context-dependent, Tony.
Yeah, and I think for me, the using a vendor solution, the clever bit, and I don't have an opinion on particular tools on this point, the clever bit is the integration with the underlying models and the infrastructure you've got. So the sort of 101 is we've taken the AI Act and decomposed it into some rules, and you can sort of case manage your process of making sure you've complied with the various dimensions of the Act. And I think hub type offerings can be super helpful in achieving that. But what's really going to work is when you can hook it in and it can automatically update based on what you're running in your infrastructure and measure it.
Yeah. Oh, that would be brilliant. Yeah, that's
I don't know whether that one exists yet, but by the way, so if anyone out there has got that in progress, give me a call. Yeah. Maybe it's a future episode.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of people are working on that. Yeah. Right? That's prize number one, that you can automatically update your centralized GRC platform dynamically with what's happened in your data science life cycle and what's happening in production when you've operationalized a system. I mean, that would be wonderful if that could happen.
Yeah. Look, we've taken a hopefully not too random walk around the AI governance topic, and we have scratched the surface of really what's in here. Honestly, there's such a lot here. But we don't have time to talk about all of it. So if there were three takeaways, advice for enterprises and perhaps for mid-market SME firms, out of everything we've been talking about, which is a lot, if there were sort of three things that you'd say to folks to take away, what do you think they might be?
We've kind of touched on one or two of them. I think it would be, if you're going to use AI, get the board involved really early on.
Okay.
And get the board educated straight away from the CEO down. At least understand why you want to use AI and then what could be the risks, and then make some decisions as to what you need to do about it. That's going to vary by organization. I think my second word of advice is, you know, again, if you're going to use AI, hire at least one person who is in charge of AI risk management, whether that's a head of responsible AI, AI ethics, but a champion, someone that can be there in your organisation, say, look, I own this and I do understand it. I think that's absolutely key. And I think the third thing is, don't be put off by AI and its dangers. It is something that's with us now. I see no reason why it won't continue. In fact, everyone's got an appetite to want to use it. Some people have the FOMO, you know, they're scared of missing out. They think their organization will suffer because competitors might get ahead from deploying AI. And my word of advice is, face into it. It is manageable. You can do the governance and you can get the benefits out of AI, but you can't get them without doing the risk management. You absolutely have to have the governance in place while you deploy. So that's I think that's my third.
And focus on that from the beginning. So sort of roll the sleeves up and design the governance whilst you start to experiment and adopt the AI. Yeah. Brilliant. Thank you, Paul. So we talked a lot about book launches and things, so I don't need to come back and ask about when you're having the launch event. If you do order the book, so if you've got your pre-order in, when are you shipping?
So it officially launches on the 23rd of October. And some people who have pre-ordered have got delivery dates from Amazon for that last week of October, physical copies, that is. But on the 23rd, you can just download the e-book or the audio book straight away.
So you're not going to be going down to the post office and putting them in for everyone?
I won't. I've got a whole box of Jiffy bags at home and I'm trimming early copies in there to people like you, Tony, some of my friends.
Everyone I know who's in the sort of publishing space and the entrepreneur space says that the best thing you can do with your book is actually just give it away because it's getting your message out there. But I guess there's a few of those copies, but everyone else is going to have to pay. But it's going to be money very well spent.
I hope so, Tony. And you know, just going back to how you open this session, this really is a practical book. It's like roll your sleeves up, do A, B, C, D, and E, and learn from what some of the organisations that we cite in the book have done as well, because some of the people we've interviewed are already doing this. Yeah. And learn from those lessons. Yeah. So,
and I always ask people on the show what else they're reading or listening to. We've obviously just spent the best part of an hour talking about your book, but is there anything else that is on your reading list at the moment?
Oh, wow. I didn't expect that one. I'm actually reading, funnily enough, I'm reading a book by Robert Reich, who was under the Clinton administration Secretary for the Department of Labor. And I'm a huge admirer of his work. And he's written a book called Coming Up Short, which is a story about his life and the work that he undertook with his department in the US, working for things like equal rights, fair labor laws, increasing minimum wage. Some of the work that he has done has been an inspiration. So that's currently what I'm going through.
Thank you. Well, we'll put that in the show notes as well. And if folks want to get in touch with you, LinkedIn, I presume.
Yeah, you should be able to find me on LinkedIn or email me, paul.donger@gmail.com.
Very good. All right. Thanks, well, thanks so much. I really enjoyed the conversation. Thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you, Tony. Really enjoyed it.